Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, hello, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Nicholas Barnes from Vitel here. We're the company that provides, for absolutely no recompense at all, the telephone number you can call in and leave a message on. I just wanted to share with you a new feature we've added. You can now use the same telephone number to record a Dumpty Dum for the beginning of the show. It's clever, it's cool, and all the hip kids are doing it. Simply call 0203 031 3105 and follow the prompts. You'll hear my dulcet tones guiding you through the whole thing. And when it comes to record the Dumpty Dum, you'll hear it in your ear while you're singing, humming, instrumenting, or, well, however you're performing it yourself. It's that easy. Oh, and it can be anonymous too. Nobody has to know it's you. Go on, give it a try. 0203 031 3105.
Yay!
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, right on.
Liebe Mitbürgerinnen und Mitbürger, heute Abend stehen wir nicht nur am Beginn eines neuen Jahres, sondern auch eines neuen Jahrzehnts. Ich bin überzeugt, wir haben gute Gründe, zuversichtlich zu sein.
Gluten-Tag. Everybody here at Dumpty Dum Towers would like to apologise, but especially Royfield, for the faux pas on last week's otherwise exemplary episode of Dumpty Dum. For some reason, he decided to belt out a line of the German national anthem that has been banned since 1952. We don't know what came over the idiot, so we'd like to apologise to all of our German listeners for this international incident of humongous proportions. Whilst we can't promise that Royfield will not do something as idiotic again, we can assure you that at least he is now up to etiquette when it comes to singing the German national anthem. Auf Wiedersehen.
This is the Lancaster Thursday Gregson session.
Wow.
Thank you.
Folks, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centred on Amridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the typographical treatment. That is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the bloody great bee that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of the storyline that's going nowhere, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum was from Fiona Frank. Somewhat apt that her surname is Frank, considering that there's a very German theme to this week's episode. And I know you're thinking, Frank, that means France, but the Franks were actually a Germanic tribe from proto-Germany. So, very apt. I've got to apologise to Fiona, because that wonderful Dumpty Dum was sent in last September. Thank you for reminding me that I hadn't used it, and it was bloody brilliant.
It was recorded at the Gregson Centre in Lancaster, and it was recorded on the 26th of September with Andy on mandolin, Ooh. Bob on whistle, Ooh. Slan on accordion,
right.
Jude, Jan and Phil
what
on
up?
Fiddle, Siobhan on flute, Francis on concertina, and Fiona on melodeon. It was absolutely amazing.
It was. It was
Thank you.
Too good for this ramshackle podcast.
It you was. Know, But I think we've peaked. We'll just go home now.
But there's going to be...
Plug. It's all over.
This episode is not only an apology to the whole German nation, but it's going to be a very musical one.
There is many, many, many other bits of musical goodness coming your way in this episode of the Dumpty Dums. But first, before we get on to the music, our Lucy, if somebody else would like to send us a Dumpty Dum, a Dumpty Dum? A Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
Just a quick reminder before we go on to that, you need to keep May the 16th free, please, chaps, for Dumpty Dum Live in London at King's Place, and also for drinks in London on April the 2nd. And there are also rumours of a meetup in Yorkshire.
Can I just quickly, I need to quickly jump in. The rumours about the meetup in Yorkshire, I've completely mislaid where you sent me that message, Yorkshire person. Lucy, we have too many ways for people to contact
us. I don't know.
I tried to look on Twitter. I looked on my personal Twitter. I looked on the Flick app messages. And I also looked on Facebook. I looked on my message box on the website on dumdydum.com. Please email me at royfield@gmail.com so I actually have your name. But it's a new listener, an uncallerinner, and she messaged me and said, I'm in Yorkshire. I would like to organise a Dumpty Dum. I don't know how it's done. How is this done? And I cannot find your message. So there you go. I've said it out on air. Email me and we'll get it all sorted. But if you are in Yorkshire, get all excited. It's going to happen soon. Sorry, as you were, it's in red, Lucy.
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. And thank you so much to Nicholas for providing it, as he said, completely free of any recompense. He doesn't even add a Dumpty Dum mug, but he provides a bloody marvellous service. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, Nicholas.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Much appreciated. Thank you also to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for apologising to the entire German nation, and to Derek Lone in the back bedroom. Derek has been following the coronavirus advice. He doesn't often wash his hands, as he believes that's what gives him his unique pheromone signature. But he has been practicing self-isolation for years, to be honest. And he always wears a mask anyway. Admittedly, though, it is a mask he got from Leicester Square, and it's of the late Queen Mother.
Oh. Probably won't provide that much protection. But masks don't, though, do they? Ball
no.
accounts, yeah. Anyway, on this week's episode, we hear views from Merlin, Young Keith, Iris, Babs and Trev. They're back. Margot, Witherspoon, Alpine, Joe and Emily. But first, before all that good stuff, it's our Lucy and our week in Ambridge.
Apparently the fact that Linda's stupid decision to do a stupid thing and tie herself to the stupid pub didn't make the Westbury Courier. Not because it was stupid, but because it was mainstream media censorship, according to Kate, naturally. Oh, I bet Kate's got views on coronavirus, and I'm so glad we don't have to hear them. And chemtrails. Anyway, Kate bigged Linda up as if she was a cross between Joan of Arc and Gandhi, and Linda only sounded faintly uncomfortable about it. Lexi is apparently using everything she learned from Gay Grables by managing a country house hotel close to her home in Bulgaria. Oh yes, it was very good training for me at Gay Grables. I know every room needs a ferret. You run illegal casino in the back room, and the whole thing is run by a very, very old man and a lady who is invisible and never say anything. Talking of Gay Grables, Linda accosted Freddie leaving the loo. It was just a number one, Linda, and I washed my hands. God, you're not even my real mum. Kate told Alice that she wasn't preggers. Oh. I failed all my tests. I only got a C minus on sperm. She then got a bit impassioned and said, I am a mother. Yes, you are a mother, Kate, in the same way I am a marathon runner. It's a nice idea, but I lack the basic qualifications of actually wanting to do the work. Oh, babies, she said. I love that time so much when they think you're infallible and they're entirely under your control before they start arguing back and they can see your faults. Then the only thing you can do is take a deep breath, smile, and leave the country. Johnny has decided he isn't going to take any more hair drugs. He's going to get hair plug implants instead. Mm. He's going to ask Freddy to get the sweepings from the stables and stick them on with copy decks. If they get in his eyes, Shula can plait them with dressage ribbon. Freddy said that was a waste of time, and all he needed to do was go to the barbers and ask for a number two, but only if they've got a decent bathroom. Freddy is going to move in with Johnny and Hannah. Lordy, it'll be like Man About the House, but with Hannah as Richard O'Sullivan. She'll be popping in and out of people's rooms in a half-open dressing gown. There'll be hilarity over showers, and if she doesn't end up lowering Freddy's Loxleys, I will be most surprised. Yay. Roman is going through a dry patch, which is a nice change, as Tracy normally makes him sleep in the wet one. He appears to be having a midlife career crisis. He's at that awkward stage of too old to be Justin Timberlake and not old enough to be Justin Elliott, or what's known as most of your life if you're not an actor. He turned up on Tracy's doorstep hoping for a bit of a therapy session, but she wisely wouldn't let him across the threshold. It wasn't because of the children. It was because she'd been depilating her legs while she watched Holmes Under the Hammer and the sitting room looked like there was a Yeti on the sofa. She diverted him to the pub. "Look," she said, nudging him as Adam and Ian wandered past. "That's our local gay couple. We had a lesbian too, but someone left the gate open and she wandered off. She's microchipped though, so we're hoping someone might bring her back. Edgley don't have a gay couple, but they have identical twins. And little Croxley's got a man who's got his nose pierced. We had a flattened peacock too. Shame you weren't here last month." Tracy then fell victim to whatever it is in the water that makes, in Ambridge, that makes perfectly sane people turn to Helen Archer for advice. It's like asking Katie Price for etiquette lessons. Anyway, she was worried about Brad and Chelsea meeting Roman, as they'd apparently quite liked her previous relationship, a limo driver she'd met on a friend's hen do. Well, I say relationship. She got her bride squad bustier trapped in his tinted window and had to jog alongside her as he went across the bypass. But for Tracy, that practically counts as a life partner. The Fat Animals of Ambridge campaign continues. Lillian and Justin are making Aziz and Amir run up and down the stairs, get off the bus's stop earlier and go carb-free, which is tricky if you're a horse. As a result, they're grumpy, their breath stinks, and they keep crying at Special K adverts. Aziz had lost 13 kilograms and he was feeling quite chuffed and was thinking he might be able to risk his skinnies again, until Yakult pointed out that 13 kilograms for a horse is basically a big poo. Talking of big poos, Shula remembered she wanted to be a vicar. The diocesan panel accepted her, apparently. Now she has to go and spend the weekend with a bishop. Who knew? In a slightly more unorthodox rite, little Xander had his naming ceremony. Half the village pitched up at Gay Grables, which Kate had prepared by sage smudging, wafting patchouli everywhere, and setting the curtains on fire with sacred candles. Mm. Debbie sent a video message. Unfortunately, it was about the arable yield in Hungary, but it's the thought that counts. Kate issued some startling promises for poor old Xander, who might not want his soul burnished and may well turn out to be happy with a Peter Rabbit mug and a Waterstones voucher. The pancake race was held at the Batam Bridge, and the huge attendance of sound effects was put down to Lillian as being due to the typographical treatment of the letter B, and by the rest of us, to unlimited Nutella. Mm. James and Leonie, or J. Leo, as I like to think of them, left their firstborn with Granny Lindy Bottom and Grandad Robert. As Mungo was completely silent, and also I don't care very much about him, I completely lost track of how old he was, so I tried to work it out by his behaviour, but I couldn't. He was walking. Oliver described him as lively. He threw things and got bored at a country park, so that means he could be anything between 1 and 24. Mm. And in news from the 19th century, Oliver was worried as Roman was seen conversing with another young lady whilst walking out with Tracy, as he put it. He sent his footman with a letter to her. "My dear Miss Horribin, I feel I must share with you the unpleasant news that your beloved may not be all he seems. He was with another gentlewoman who is entirely unknown to me, and I distinctly saw him in the car park fiddling around with her Volvo. My best regards to your dear Fanny, Olivia Olive Sterling." Yakult and Kate are back together again, and there was a nauseating rapprochement. Now, that was one scene I could have done with just hearing about third hand, but no, of course, we had to be there for the coy giggling and the play fighting. Although there was a mystifying bit in which Kate seemed surprised that Yakult didn't keep his knives and his socks in the same place. Haven't we all got a knife and sock drawer, you know, next to the cupboard with the mugs and guns in? Over at Brookfield, sad times for poor old Hector the Bull. He's got sluggish sperm. "I hope we won't have to put him down," said Ruth. Blimey, that's hardcore. If I was David, that'd be a bit of a wake-up call. If he nods off on the job, he'll find Ruth hovering above him, syringe in hand, saying, come on, old fella, your time's up. The end.
Well done, you. Well done, you. You've done a lot of monologues in the last couple of days, haven't you?
I'm absolutely exhausted.
So first off, you need to give us a reprise, not of the whole monologue, but of your Saturday evening. What did you do? Where were you?
I was at the Academic Archers in Reading, which also coincided with the latest reported incidence of coronavirus was in Reading at the same time as the Academic Archers. So I do hope you didn't bring it with us. It was absolutely splendid. There were some marvellous people. And I would like to say thank you very much to Michael Rowan, who whether he appointed himself or whether they appointed him, I don't know. But he decided he was artist liaison, as he put it, which meant he kept getting me cups of tea, ushering me to the lavatory and back again, and was absolutely marvellous. And if he's available as a full-time employee, I will willingly take him on. And we had very nice dinner. Mm-hmm. And then I did a bit of a roundup of the year in Ambridge at the end. And I think that's going out as... Is that going out to our Patreons?
It will. It will go out to our Patreons because they've had precious little from us for about 3 months. But we are working on things, but you'll get that this week. So if you give us shilling, some shekel, moolah, some dosh, specifically for this Dum De Dum enterprise, you are going to get Lucy's week, month, year in Ambridge this week. Mm. So,
and also a very, very, very special thing.
Yeah.
From me and Harriet, which not even Royfield knows about yet. It's that special.
That special. Crumbs. Excitement abounds. Just whilst I'm thinking about it, folks, YouTube, our Lucy's Weeks in Ambridge are also on YouTube. So if you haven't done so already, go on to YouTube.com and type in Lucy's Week in Ambridge and subscribe. We need to get to 1,000 subscribers, and we're at 470 something or another at the moment. So we're almost halfway there, but it's very important that we get to 1,000. So chop chop, get on there, get subscribing, and hit the little bell notification, which is top right, which then means that your computer type thing or even your phone will alert you when there's a new week in Ambridge on YouTube. And there's also other Dum De Dum content there besides. So, Luce, I'm not going to prattle through my notes to try and fill out this episode because there's no need for any filler. This episode is all killer.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
This person has been lost to the vagaries of Royfield's fuck-ups for the last 2 weeks. It's Witherspoon.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Barinall, Dumpty Demers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First off, no hard feelings about being left off the podcast 2 weeks ago. I could never have any hard feelings about our esteemed hosts. Speaking of hard feelings, I definitely think that Yelkult irons his boxers.
Yep.
A man with an obsessive-compulsive personality such as Ambridge's junior vet would need everything neat and orderly, whether seen or unseen. Next on the agenda, handsome husband and I went to see the new film version of Emma. Boy, was I disappointed. I thought I was going to see a spin-off of our favorite docudrama, but instead I got an early 19th century rom-com. The big similarity between the Archers and Emma was the always maddening cross-communication wires between members of an extended family in an English village. But Jane Austen's stories have it all over the Archers in their consistency of character behavior, unlike the residents of Ambridge, whose abrupt reverses can give me whiplash. Speaking of abrupt turns of behavior, let's talk about Ben. There we were, singing his praises last week, but this week he was acting like an obnoxious teenager with his brother, toward whom I actually felt sympathy. But guess what? Ben is a teenager, and abrupt turns of behavior are not unexpected, so he is forgiven. Finally, a shout-out to caller-inners Merlin and Margot, who both currently live in the state of New Jersey. While I reside in the upper-lower east-west side of Manhattan, I have worked in Summit, New Jersey for the past 31 years. I sense that Merlin lives in Princeton and Margot in Morristown, but I could be very wrong. Please join us for our next New York City get-together and talk to everyone soon. Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon here, without Angus Haggis, as I'm in Delray Beach, Florida for a few days. It's a bit chillier than normal, but very, very sunny. As I'm lying down on a lounge chair, this caller-in is going to be a bit laid back and none too serious. So, I have to tell you of a dum-ty-dum coincidence. Sadly, just a few miles from here, Cy Sperling died last week. My non-American dum-ty-dum friends are probably asking, who the hell is Cy Sperling? But the American listeners of a certain vintage are saying, that name sounds very familiar. Perhaps if I uttered this famous catchphrase, I'm not only the president of the Hair Club, I am also a client, you would remember in an instant. Mr. Sperling, who was the founder of Hair Club for Men, the king of late-night ads and infomercials in the 1980s, and spoofed by famous comedians and common folk alike, booked an appointment for the big hair salon in the sky at the age of 78. That brings us back to Johnny. As was pointed out last week by our hosts, his worries about his hair loss are most likely greatly exaggerated and reflect a more general body dysmorphia. Perhaps he has other OCD symptoms as well. And why didn't he go to his physician first for possible medication? Well, does anyone go to a doctor in Ambridge? Are there any left in the area? A workup for reasons other than male pattern baldness would include consideration of hypothyroidism, diabetes and other autoimmune diseases, vitamin deficiencies, infections, and psychiatric illnesses. Maybe he has undiagnosed trichotillomania. Just a thought. Talk to you soon, and remember to wash your hands.
Mm-hmm. Don't you start. Blimey. That body dysmorphia thing is very interesting because Helen had anorexia. Johnny has, which is a form of body dysmorphia. Johnny has whatever it is he's got. He's just got a very negative attitude about himself generally. Mm. But did Helen ever get any counselling for her anorexia, or was that just another, you know, 2 week crack addiction sort of thing?
You know what? She didn't, did she?
No, it just went. Oh, but when she was getting stressed with Rob, she started messing around with her eating again, didn't she?
Yes.
Mm. So it's sort of something that surfaces when she feels out of control.
I think it was wasn't that the point where Witherspoon said that she needed counselling? Mm. I've got a sneaky feeling and that was the whole thing about nobody in Ambridge gets counselling. Could be wrong, but no, she didn't get any help. It just went away, didn't it?
Mm, yeah. Because I was thinking, if she'd had counselling, Johnny would be the ideal person to go, and she would be the ideal person.
In
no other instance, she actually would be a good person for him to talk to, as opposed to... everybody else when it's an absolute sodding disaster. But on that occasion, that would be relevant. But of course, she didn't have counselling, so it wouldn't. There's no point. Mm. No.
Yeah. And just quick note to Witherspoon's call there. The reason why it was super long is because that was last week's and this week's. there you go. All right. Sorry, Mr. Spoon. Yes. Hair loss dealt with. Other bits and pieces. Nice to have you back on the podcast, sir. It's all Lucy's fault. All Lucy's fault. If you don't hear yourself on the show, just blame Lucy. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah.
Good.
Hello, Lucy, Royfield, and all the other Dumpty Dummers all over the world. It's Margot from the Garden State. I had doubts about Kate's naming ceremony for little Xander, but I have to say I really loved it. I'm not religious, but I felt tremendous pressure from my family to baptize my own daughters. I feel like a ceremony like Kate's would have been something that I would have loved to have done for my own children. And I thought that Ian and Adam's gesture of making Kate a guy parent was beautiful. I will say that I did feel bad for Kate after inwardly screaming about her becoming a mother again for this last storyline. But although she is misguided in her parenting skills, Kate loves being pregnant. I don't know why, but she does. And she loves all of those early stages of childhood. I'm sure many parents feel the same. Jakob's declaration of love to Kate was also amazing. They are complete opposites, but maybe this will be the time for Kate, and she will be able to have a long-term relationship that won't result in her running to another continent. As for Kate's ex, Roy Tucker, maybe he needs some excitement and he should just pack it in and go to Bulgaria and be with Lexi. After all, since all the other Tuckers are gone out of Ambridge, we don't hear from Abby, would it actually be the worst thing? Finally, the bee at Ambridge took yet another turn, with Linda finally sinking lower than just handcuffing a wax figure to a sign. She has kept Mungo away from his other grandmother. I have to say, Linda, this does not look good on you. I hope all of you have a wonderful week and enjoy this week's episodes. Bye!
Luce, the whole Lillian and Linda thing, right? Was it really fair for Lillian to give it to Linda the way that she did about old Mungo?
Well, God, that I've been mulling over this. Somebody on Twitter, I think it was Little Kim, said, how come the women always get the blame for this sort of thing? And when the men are just able to abdicate responsibility completely. There is, James was in the village, he should have let his mother know he was coming. He should have told her when he was coming. He should have told her what the access arrangements, what the visiting arrangements were going to be. So maybe Linda has Mungo in the morning and she has Mungo in the afternoon. And there's no way he would have just believed Linda that, or he shouldn't have just believed Linda that Lillian was too busy with the bee at Ambridge to take care of Mungo or even see him. It was interesting that Witherspoon was talking about Emma, the film Emma or the book Emma, because the line in Emma that everybody sort of remembers is "badly done, Emma, badly done," and that was badly done by Linda. She should regardless of what James, she knows James is a useless lump. But she should not have said, she should not have lied and said, no, Lillian is too busy with the bee at Ambridge. That was really poor. And Robert, Robert clearly felt embarrassed, uneasy. But this is Robert's daughter, right? So why was anybody talking to Linda? Why were they not talking to Robert? Why is it always the women that have to make the sodding domestic arrangements?
Fair point.
It drives me mad. Why are the women in charge of all the bloody communication? It absolutely drives me absolutely, absolutely, absolutely nuts.
Yeah. Whilst that is true, Lillian did say in that exchange, or she said it to Jolene, that she hasn't been the best mother and she's trying to make up for it now. One of the key drivers of that whole exchange between Lillian and Linda is the fact that Lillian feels guilty for being that absent parent.
Yes.
Absent emotionally and physically when her son was growing up.
Yeah.
And
but that's so, between Lillian and her son. Yes, it's bugger all to do with Linda.
Exactly. But she can't take it out on her son, the fact that she now feels marginalised in this way. She can only take it out on a bête noire, which is Linda. But Linda, 3/4 of that whole exchange, Linda was just collateral damage. Really, she was upset with her son and upset with herself. However, Linda was a convenient excuse. And then Linda said, Linda did actually then lie to make things even worse. But Lillian is walking around with a whole set of guilt and neuroses to do with her relationship with James. Hence, the whole false bonhomie that they share when she comes, because she says, I was actually not a good mother, hence I'm trying to be a better grandmother. So she's on edge anyway. And then there you go. The head of the Rebels is wandering around, lording it with a grandson, and she just lost her shit.
But I don't like this Linda. I don't like this side of her. The trouble is, Linda has... She's always had before, apart from the bypass, she has always had a positive campaign to get behind. What, when she's at her best is when she's got something positive to make or achieve or say or whatever. This campaign that she's orchestrating against the Bee is entirely negative. It is petty, it is negative, it is pointless, and it is a waste of her intellect. She's got a job that doesn't, nowhere near taxes her brain enough, does not keep her brain busy enough. So she just gets like this sort of backup of nervous, bitter energy, and that's when it sort of goes a bit rank and starts being really unpleasant, which is what she's being to Lillian. And she really needs something positive to be involved in, something where she's, rather than stopping something, she's starting something. That's when she's happy. This is just a rotten campaign. It's a rotten storyline, and it's bringing out rotten side of Linda that we don't like. Well, I don't anyway.
Amen to that, by the way. The other thing where I feel this is inconsistent to the historical Linda is Linda is always the person that actually you can confide in and completely has a very human and vulnerable side and has great empathy. You get Linda, the public-facing Linda, who is a school mom and basically, you know, gently bullies everybody, but fundamentally because she wants to do good. But I know I refer to this at least once a year or so on Dum De Dum, but the Kathy and the rape storyline. Kathy didn't turn to Linda. She broke down in front of Linda. And that's when you saw what a wonderfully warm person Linda actually was. And in this regard, I actually thought that this was not my Linda Snell as well. That whole exchange, she isn't snotty when it comes to somebody who is obviously hurt emotionally. That's when you get the full 3D character of Linda. She has a massive heart.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more. Should we do Babs and Trev?
Yes.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world.
Babs and Trev here. Before we start, Trev, I think you have a correction for Royfield.
Yes. Last time we called, Royfield assumed I was of Jamaican stock, when in fact my folks are from St. Lucia.
Oh, small where they have island.
A French rather than an English patois. Sorry, Royfield. More of that another time, perhaps.
Another great Tracyism from me this week. When Roman said, "You're right, Tracy," she responded with, "I usually am. Better get used to it." Go, Tracy. Say it as it is.
Well, I hope she's right about Roman's flirting and dismissing Oliver's fears. Brave of him to have mentioned it, I thought.
So we've all had a good old moan, and quite rightly so, about the ridiculous Bull Extinction Rebellion campaign. But this week, some of the writing made me quite emotional, actually.
Really, Babs? Like what?
Well, quite a few things, actually. So, for example, Kate talking to Alice about wanting to be a mother again. And then later, the reunion with Jacob in the yurt. Jim's conversation with Alistair, Jazza and Shula asking Jim could she give him a hug. And finally, Kirsty and Phil asking Roy to be their best man was really sweet.
You also liked Kate's speech at the naming ceremony, didn't you?
I did. I thought it all went well and I felt that actually Kate's sentiment was genuine. I like the idea of having guide parents.
Yeah, me too. I've got to say, though, I am bemused by the whole Kate Yakult loving. Just doesn't make sense.
When does love ever make sense, Trev?
True that, Babs. My final thought is about the war of words between Lillian and Linda, moving up to DEFCON 1. Very entertaining. I can hardly wait to hear how Lillian will retaliate after Mungo Gate.
Well, that's all from us.
Love and hugs to all.
Bye.
You can tell, in terms of, you know, there were so many little soft moments in Ambridge last week. You can tell that it was a Kerry week.
Kerry week. Yeah. Yeah.
It was just...
He floored me twice. I actually tweeted him. The Jim and the Alistair and Jazza bit. Mm. I'm going to go again. This is ridiculous. When Jazza said, "Ma, make Jim change the world," or something. He'd change the world. Yeah. And then when Jim sort of Jim and Shula he properly apologised and said, I can't remember what word he used, but it was a very very well chosen word to describe his behaviour to her, and and that she'd exercise sort of true spirit of Christianity, or the true spirit of humanity, which is to keep being nice to Jim in the face of his unpleasant behavior, and remain supportive, and genuinely care about him and show genuine empathy and everything. And as much as we like to moan about Shula, at heart we know she is, or tries to be, a good person. And that was the genuine moment when you could see the good in her. She did handle that extremely, extremely well.
She did. A slight little bit of salt I'm going to throw at the end of the Jim storyline. It was so obvious that it was being wrapped up. You know, there were...
Yeah.
No, there's a hug with Jim and Shula, as you've just said.
Yeah.
There was... The three-way conversation between Alistair, Jazza and Jim, it was like, this is the end, this is the end, this is the end. And I appreciate, this is the reason why I'm somewhat slightly confused about this, because it was so obviously, wrapping this up in a bow, it's done.
Mm.
And I think the whole point of the Jim storyline is, well, there's more than one point. That number one... abuse and the effects of abuse didn't just start in the 1970s. So then you have, people who are relatively young suffering with the aftermath. That actually this has been going on for eons, and people just swept it underneath the carpet. That's the one thing. And then it's also to show us that, yes, it has affected Jim throughout his life and his relationships with his loved ones. But Jim is not allowing it to define the rest of his life.
Mm.
That's the whole point. So in that way, you do need it to be wrapped up in a bow, because Jim can just be Jim afterwards.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But as much as I enjoyed all of those interactions, I did think it was so obviously being signposted that this is the end and Jim is just going to be Jim.
It was interesting, though, that it happened on the week that Harvey Weinstein was sent to prison.
Hmm.
When there was a kind of there was an end to that storyline as well, you know, where people had been vindicated in what they'd been saying. And then on The Archers, it's the same thing. He's found guilty. Other people get to know that, you know, Jason had other victims. His grave was desecrated. He was no longer kind of held up in the regard that he was. And, I just thought the timing of it was quite interesting.
I think if I've learned anything from the Harvey Weinstein fallout, is just that our expectations of the victims of abuse isn't that they should act in a way that we see as being correct, that necessarily that they scream and shout at that time and then righteously go off to the authorities and say that this has happened.
Mm.
There are so many other things that poor person has been subject to, you know.
Yeah.
And so you read those accounts of the relationship, in inverted commas, that some of those women had with Harvey Weinstein afterwards. And it doesn't fit our very neat preconceptions of how people should behave. And ditto with Jim. But Jim was a child when it happened to him, and he lived, you know, in a time and a culture where sex just wasn't even talked about full stop, let alone abuse, you know. So I think that was, you know, I think you're right to connect the two things. But for me, it's not about the perpetrators. It's about victims and how they live with the effects of abuse and how they react. And we need to be able to open our hearts and our minds to the different ways of which how people cope or not with the ramifications of abuse. Moving on from Babson Trip. Oh, just before I move on. Now, you're from St. Lucia, mate. Oh, I'm so sorry for you. Now, the thing is, it's a big thing. People from the island of Jamaica in the Caribbean, we're sophisticated. We're from a big island, right? It takes about 4 hours to get from one end of Jamaica to another. St. Lucia, about 25 minutes. Pebble in the Caribbean. There's a real snobbery between Jamaicans and people from Dominica or St. Kitts, St. Lucia, because we always say they're small island people. They're yokels. So you stop there with your St. Lucian ways. There's me sophisticating you up, thinking that you're Jamaican. Sorry about that, Trev. I'll never make that mistake again.
Hello, Lucy, Royfield, and Dumpty Dum World. I'm calling in the middle of the day, and the archers for the week is not yet done, but I thought I'll use the silent moment so I don't sound like speaking from the broom cupboard like last week. And I was really glad to be called quietly eccentric. I think that fits it very, very much. Thank you, Lucy. I'm very proud of this little title. My kids have started following me around because they find it really, really funny when I close my door and start babbling for 2 minutes in English. So, well, I have to hide away and keep my secret. You wanted to know what the archers would be in German, and it's a bit of an awkward translation. It's die Bogenschützen. Archery as a sport is Bogenschießen. And there is a second name, Schütz or Schütze. But, well, nobody knows the archers in Germany anyway. Quite a scandal, isn't it? But, well, so that's my little secret, and I keep it to myself. And maybe one day I will found a community of German archers listeners, but that's way in the future. I have responded to Royfield's request and sent in a nose flute recording again. So I can say it's me almost done for this week. I think that storyline that must not be named maybe is past, and that's good. And I was ignoring it. I was team ignore it. And I think everything's going in a quite nice direction. So, well, I'm looking forward to the next storylines. Have a nice week, day, and see you soon. Bye-bye from Germany.
Just.
Bye.
Lucy.
Just.
Lucy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so in love with Iris. I love this woman. I've got hardcore emotions for her. Thank you, Iris, and for everything that you do. Oh, you wonderful human being.
So she thinks that the B storyline is finished?
It's hardly finished, is it?
Not really. I mean, I am damned if I mean, I know this episode I've been calling it the B at, partly just because I'm trying to sort of, I'm talking about that storyline. But it's always going to be the bull for me. It's no, I'm never going to be able to think of it as a typographical treatment, my arse. It's ridiculous. You know, it's just nonsense. It's the bull.
It is. It is just the bull.
Can I make a pedantic point as well?
Oh, please do. You're on a podcast, so there's no time limits here.
The hell is happening to Lillian's business? Why is she always at the pub when they have no customers, and her business, that's actually the one that's supposed to be, you know, making money for her as opposed to losing money for her, which is what the bull is, why is she you know, why are there three of them behind the bar in an empty pub when the thriving business she does have No one's doing it. She doesn't have Anthea. She doesn't have anybody.
Yeah, but
what is the hell is going on?
Yeah, but Luce, I think you've just explained her thriving business is thriving, so she doesn't need to be there 24/7.
But it doesn't thrive. She's not there 24/7. She's not there 1/7. She's just not doing it. She never talks about it. She never goes to see any properties. She's not buying any. She's not selling any.
Simple answer. It's called sloppy plotting. It's called very...
Sloppy splotting. That's what it is.
Sloppy plotting. And Anthea is such a tremendous character as well. They introduced her as, you know, a snowflake in summer. Like, she's just gone. And she was funny. You understood the business. You understood the relationship between Justin and Lillian business-wise because of her. She's a great foil to have in the background of Lillian's life. It's bad plotting is what it is. However, it does make sense to me that, let's say, Lillian... We have no real sense that Lillian thinks that this is anything other than a great idea to change the name of the ball. But maybe her continued presence is her actually being very nervous about it and realising that she might have made a major mistake. Maybe, maybe, maybe. But anyway, I'm not talking about this storyline.
No,
so
we
got a total embargo on all B in Ambridge bullshit storylines on this podcast. If you want to hear about the B in Ambridge... go and listen to another podcast because we don't talk about it. All right, here we go. Upper Lower East West Side mention this person. He's from the Garden State. It's our Merlin. He's a vet, don't you know?
Hello, everyone in Dumpty Dumland. This is Merlin speaking. First off, apologies for not leaving a message last week. I normally call in on a Sunday. Last Sunday at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was suddenly taken with acute vomiting and diarrhea.
Uh-oh.
And for 36 hours, my best friend was made of porcelain. The good news is I lost 2 kilos in weight. Yay! The bad news, my taste buds have still not recovered, and gin and tonic just tastes weird at the moment. Anyway, let's move on to something a bit more Archers related. Been an interesting week in veterinary news. There's been a lot of talk about castration, and that took me back to our discussions about Tony and the bullocks. But this has been discussion about lambs and about the use of anaesthetics and welfare. So it's very good to see that that's all becoming more consideration and people are moving on that. But talking about the Archers and veterinary, really frustrated with Alistair. I personally have thought for a while he should retire. But indiscriminate use of antibiotics, I think there might be an infection in Hector, your bull. Really, in this day and age, vets, especially in the UK, have made massive efforts to reduce how many antibiotics are being used on farm. And there are ways to know whether there are, if there's a chronic infection, you're going to be able to tell through blood samples, things like that. You'd certainly want to investigate further. You'd want to know what you are treating so you could actually target a proper antibiotic. So very frustrating on that side. The nice thing is it's been a very friendly week, hasn't it? So we can all be happy because everyone seems to be in love. Well, almost, apart from Lillian and Linda, which just continues to be annoying. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye, Merlin.
I'm so sorry you've been multitasking, Merlin. That doesn't sound very nice at all. But I completely agree with you about, without knowing anything about vetty things. When he said, he might have an infection, let's just give him antibiotics. I'll go and get the antibiotics. I was like, do you not test to see if he's got an infection before you just dole out the bloody antibiotics? I was talking to a very nice lady called Elizabeth Campion at the Academic Archers, and she specialises in land law, and she's into horses as well. And she said the solicitor stuff drives her absolutely bonkers on the Archers because it's not researched properly. The conflict of interest stuff in terms of OSHA representing everybody for everything, you know, she represents somebody that while knowing both parties involved, it's absolutely nuts. And she said also the horse stuff, She said the way they dealt with the laminitis was, she said, it's a really, really serious thing, and it didn't. And she said Shula was talking about a bridle when she should have been talking about a harness, or the other way around. And I think, but maybe it's less of an agricultural story editor and more of a vet story editor that they need at the moment.
But we did mention this a couple of weeks ago, that we have to suspend disbelief on some of the minutiae of the storylines, because, you know.
But we were saying at the Academic Archers that when it's your thing, it clangs really loudly, as, you know. It's like when, I'm sure it did for you, you know, when they managed to get an app up and running in, you know, 10 days. Really? Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for somebody to mention, you know, whilst they're tilling the field, that they're listening to a podcast. No. But anyway, mobile phones have only just made an appearance in the last couple of years in Ambridge. So, you know, they are somewhat behind the eight ball when it comes to technology. Right, so that's Merlin. Nice to know that you're at least a little bit better in the old tummy department, if not in the taste bud department. But that always is the beneficial side effect of having a touch of the deli bellies, isn't it? That you do drop a bit of weight and stuff. All of a sudden, trousers that you're struggling to put on, you know, fit you perfectly. So thumbs up for diarrhea is what I say.
Hello. Young Keith here, calling a couple of bits and bobs, really, not too much to say. Mainly the thing is that I'm now obsessed with Jakob and love him and everything about him. But I was really annoyed with Alistair this week, sort of gossiping to Ruth about Jakob's private life and his relationship with Kate and stuff like that. And I actually thought that wasn't very realistic. I don't think Alistair would gossip like that. And I don't think Ruth would care about Jakob's private life. And the whole thing just didn't sit very well with me at all. And I'll briefly mention, what's her name? Linda. And not mentioning whatever the grandkids called visit, and I got to say, it did ring quite true to me. There's some issues in my family with my sister, her kids, my mum, the other grandmother, and that kind of game playing does come up quite a lot. And I quite like that. It was quite true, and I think that would run quite true in a lot of families. And the last thing was a bit of a different one. I was watching quite a good film. I know it's a kids' film, but I was watching it called something along the lines of The Boy That Would Be King. And there's a really good character in it, and I was thinking, God, this sounds familiar. I was thinking, who is this? Who's this actor? And it just dawned on me, could it be? It couldn't be. It was Josh Archer, which he was fantastic in this film, I've got to say. And it's made me like him ever so slightly more. And the thought of him riding around on his bike, that the two combined, do I actually like Josh Archer? I don't know.
Josh Archer is played by Angus Imrie, who is the son of Celia Imrie of Victoria Wood fame. And not just Victoria Wood, obviously, but a lot of other stuff. And she's an amazing actress, I think, and you can see where he gets it from.
Yeah, no, he is good. The whole Josh with his tail in between his legs for the last few weeks, I think, has been very well played. But also with him realising the ramifications of his actions, what they could have done to the whole business.
Yeah.
You know, he said very clearly to Ben, I feel sorry, I put everything in jeopardy, etc., etc. So it'd be interesting to see where Josh goes, you know, the blossoming of post-dodgy Josh goes in terms of his relationships with everybody down there at Brookfield. Competitive grandparenting. Go on.
I don't want to talk, I haven't got anything to say about that really, but...
Me either.
The gossipy thing... Mm. I actually think that's right. Alistair has form for being quite gossipy. He's talked about... He used to sort of gossip a bit with Shula and talk about his clients.
Apart from just that, remember, Alistair actually is Ruth's brother-in-law.
Yeah, but Ruth is really gossipy. Ruth really loves... The children used to say... her children used to talk about, oh, mum will know. Mum, you know, won't take long for mum to find out, sort of thing. And she's like the acceptable face of Susan Carter, really, Ruth. So it's, you know, it makes perfect sense that she would...
I don't know about that, Luce. Come
she's
on
She's not
now.
That bad. She doesn't...
Come on.
She doesn't pass it on. No. But she doesn't off like...
Hey, there you go.
Things.
She doesn't pass it on. And Ruth doesn't start a rumour... But she'll listen to some tittle-tattle.
Yes, yes.
She'll listen to it.
As that old saying goes, if you've got nothing nice to say, come and sit by me. That's
Ruth. Well done, you. Maybe you. As always, you're making me titter. Now, from young Keith, we go to, well, yes, this caller.
Hey, this is fake Joseph, really. I must admit, I was very touched when Iris expressed concern about me. Joseph, you are not Austrian. I thought, well, that's me told, isn't it? You know? Yes, well, you can call me Alpine Joe from now. Any PG Woodhouse fans will know immediately what that refers to.
Yay.
Anyway, hello, Royfield.
Hello.
DC and Iris. My posting energized her into action. And no spruiting. So, you know, few lucky people. So, meanwhile, plot predictions. Well, yeah, I can see Kate and Mr. Asperger. She took the pregnancy pretty well, actually. I thought he was going to go all mental on her. But, of course, she is mental. So he is strangely attracted to her because she's a wild Mustang stallion roaming through the Californian desert, and he is a stay-at-home Coronation Street watcher. So there we go. Anyway, bye.
Bye.
Where are you with Kate and Jacob right now? Let's just forget the fact that he seems to be winning over the hearts and the minds of the listeners because of the way he took the fatherhood news, and then with the fact that, you know, he did chase Kate and say no, he still wants to be in a relationship with her. Where do you actually stand with the construct of them actually being in a relationship? Because I call bullshit on every level. I just don't believe it. I like them together. I think it makes for interesting radio. I enjoy it, but it reminds me that I'm listening to something which has been put together in a writing room. Because I don't really believe it would happen in the real world.
If I may use a metaphor.
Ooh, okay.
Ish. I am quite a control... I'm not as bad as Yakult, but I'm quite a control freaky person.
Right.
And... Oh, sorry?
I said right.
And... When people say to me, you must go to India, you would love it. And I say, why would I love it? And they say, oh, the smell and the chaos and the crowds. And my stomach, I can actually feel my stomach going into a knot. When they say it, even when I say it, I can feel it going. And I think in my head, I would love to go to India. I know in my heart, I would loathe every second of it because of the chaos. And I'm sure Yakult would like to think that he could have a relationship with somebody as unbounded as Kate, but in reality I think it would kill him. And he couldn't do it. So I think it's incredibly unrealistic. And I think it is exactly as you say, entirely confected in a writer's room. And it is, but it is in the grand tradition of screwball comedy. It's Howard Hawks and Bringing Up Baby. You know, it's Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant racing around the countryside in a, you know, with a dinosaur bone sticking out the back of the car. And he says to her, it's not you. In quieter moments, I quite like you. Unfortunately, there haven't been any quieter moments. And that's exactly what it's like with Yakult and Kate. But that was in the 1940s, and it was a screwball comedy. It was not real. And it's also, you know, What's Up, Doc, Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neill. It's that kind of juxtaposition of characters, which works brilliantly in screwball comedy. It's not realistic in a soap opera that purports to be daily life, everyday life. Mm.
The other thing about putting together characters that have very different temperaments is that their situational closeness needs to be believable, and the reason for their situational closeness. So Alistair, Jazza and Jim, it makes sense that they are cohabiting in the outset, even though they're very different people. Very obviously, Alistair and Jim, it's father and son. Alistair was married, he needed somewhere to live, etc. And then we have Jazza, who was Jim's tenant. So that makes...
What about Tracy and Oliver? Because we're heading in that direction too, aren't we?
Fundamentally, that's a work...
That's the same kind of odd couple scenario, though, isn't it?
But it makes sense. It's a slight leap that Oliver would have put her on reception. It's a slight leap, you know. Mm. But it's an employer, an employee. So you can have different character sets. Mm-hmm. What I don't believe about this is that they would embark on a relationship which lasts... And they are so different. It doesn't need to be a stretch for me that they can have a one night stand or maybe even a week of furious bonking, and then just go, my God, you're weird. No, you're weird. No, you're a freak. No, you're. But they can't. It's not sustainable. Mm. Mm. Kate is too Kate, and Jacob is too Jacob.
Yeah,
and I thought that the week when Kate was round at his, and she was going and she was just being Kate and not realizing that everything in Jacob's flat has its place, and he needs it to be in its place. I thought, well, surely that's there to show us that they cannot cohabit. There was no,
but they can be in a relationship without cohabiting.
I would agree normally, but Jacob needing everything to be in its place and for it to be measured with a millimeter ruler is just the physical manifestation of how his mind works. Everything.
So it's like Kate and Roy wouldn't be that much of a stretch. Kate and Jacob is just that little bit too far.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, you know, Roy, it's interesting that you bring up Roy now, because obviously Roy has said, my life is boring. Why am I here? Why am I doing Excel spreadsheets? Yeah. And Roy needs for something to be thrown at his life. Mm. He always has done. It's half the reason why, you know, he fell in bed with Lizzie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Jacob, rightly or wrongly, feels that he has the majority of life's questions answered. And he has a way of which the world makes sense for him. And he can operate within that. Kate is completely the opposite. She's totally boundaryless. Again, I get it that they could maybe meet at a party and Jacob is a little bit tiddly, or the other way around, and they could meet and have one night, maybe a week of passion, maybe even a relationship of sorts. But as soon as they cohabit, all over. And actually, I would say, any relationship that they have of any length, it's all over. They're too different. However, it makes for fun radio when you hear them together. I just don't believe it in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Mr. Alpine Joe, and for making us think. More from Alpine Joe later, because...
I like him. Now he's called Alpine Joe.
There's more music coming on in this week's episode. There's more Nasen Fluten, and also we have a soon to be hit number from Iris's band, which will play out at the end of the show. And there's more Alpine Joe. But before we do that, we're going to end with our last caller in era, and it's our Emily.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. This is Emily phoning from the Abu Dhabi desert. Just a quick one. Wanted to call to talk about the Johnny storyline. and I think it's a great storyline. We need to live in a place, in a world where people can talk about things. It doesn't matter what your age is, what your gender is, what your race is, what your background is. We have to give people a space where they can talk and be listened to, whatever the problem is that they're worrying about. And so that's why I think it's great that they're doing this with Johnny, because, you know, he's been portrayed as a character that's fairly good looking. He's clearly in good physique if he's a farmer. And actually, this is an issue. And we can disagree whether that's important or not. It's not about that. It's about being a society where people are heard when they have an issue. And it's just so important. You know, you look at the stats, particularly for male suicide, and it's so devastatingly sad. Mm. So I think what the Archers have done with this, with the Jim storyline, you know, also with Elizabeth's depression, is really important. And actually, it sort of makes me a bit sad that people are going, oh, get over it, Johnny, on the internet or Twitters or whatever, because we all have issues, and actually they need to be heard because your feelings matter. So anyway, that's my opinion on it. So hats off to the Archers. I really hope they do this storyline justice. Very quickly, Freddie, just tell Linda, come on, you know, it doesn't matter. She's not going to tell anyone. Yeah. Or swear it to secrecy. Anyway, thank you. Love the podcast, as you know. Speak soon. Bye.
Lucy, is that Emily that was the nanny in Paris?
No.
Okay.
This is Emily that start. Where was she before? She was somewhere before and now she's moved.
Hmm. I knew she was somewhere else before, but I've got my Emily's mixed up. So sorry, Emily, who used to be the nanny in Paris. Emily, who's in the desert, why don't you call in next week and let us know where you used to be before, because it's really like taxing my brain. I'll quickly say this and I'll defer to you, Freeman. It's noticeable that we are having more storyline to do with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was Helen. Then there was Lizzie. Then there was Will. And then now there is Johnny. And we've had three prominent storylines about mental health in, what, the last 18 months? Which goes alongside with society's growing recognition and acceptance that this is an epidemic within all of our communities now, but also that we can be comfortable to be able to talk about it and to say that we suffer, you know, through mental illness. But it just occurred to me that the whole Johnny storyline is just another in kind of important marker that of that, but then also. That, and I know I've said this way back when, but you know, as Emily said, the rates of male suicide, it's a silent epidemic. Mm. It really is, you know, for a whole load of societal, cultural, generational issues, young men and middle-aged men, actually, five times more than women choose to end their lives, you know, and we're not saying that Johnny's anywhere near that right now, but it starts with small things, feeling inadequate, feeling marginalised, etc. So,
well, that is, it's just whatever. If it's the thing that manifests is the thing that is manifested is just the peg that you've chosen to hang the insecurity on. So it's either your weight or your loss, hair loss, or your, you know, anxiety or shyness or inability to do a thing that you wish you could do, or you know, it's just getting to sort of figure out what that starting point for that inadequacy is, or for that feeling of anxiety around a particular issue. And I also found it quite interesting on social media that there was a lot of people very glibly and saying, as Emily said, saying, oh, get over it, get over yourself, blah, 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 blah. And I noticed after the Jimus storyline where he said, when Alistair said to him, so do you want to go and talk? Do you want to go and tell the police about what happened to you?
Hmm.
And he decided not to. There was a brief flurry of tweets and people being quite, it was quite startling, saying, one said, Jim, you coward. And it was quite sort of aggressive almost. And I just thought, I just wondered if there was a lot of projection going on there.
Mm.
And people who feel maybe that they feel anxious about something in their own lives, and they're, you know, projecting a bravado they don't, they're wanting to see a bravado that they don't feel themselves in other people. So I don't think, yeah.
I agree. As, you know, as is my wont, I go, I agree, Freeman, I agree. As I said, you know, with the whole kind of Harvey Weinstein thing, and you read those reports of what happened post the abuse, post the rapes, post the sexual assaults, and it doesn't fit a very neat narrative. It doesn't. That doesn't mean that it didn't happen, though. That's the thing. And it doesn't mean that it didn't affect that person in really terrible and detrimental ways. And this is, for me, one of the aspects where the show has been very clever and very brave. Because if this was a more tropily written docu-soap, Jim would have trotted on down to the police station while Jason was alive and
yeah.
would have had his moment in court, pointing at Jason and whatever, and said, I've got you back for the abuse that you, you know, put me through 60-odd years yeah. ago, you bastard. Life isn't that neat. And no. that's what this has taught us. You know, and this is great. This is an example of great writing and plotting. Not the nonsense that we're having with the whole Bean Ambridge and stuff. But this is to show us that things are not necessarily neat and can't just be tied up and finished neatly because of our own kind of demands. We're human beings. We act in different ways. And Jim is anything but a coward. What he was is a man of his age and culture, and he didn't know all those years, those 60 odd years, that there was somewhere where he could go with these feelings of utter anger that this was done to him. You know, remember, he's a man of 70 plus or 80. Come on, you know, things aren't so neat. Right, Luce, do we have any emails?
Do you know, I haven't checked. Have we got
yeah,
any?
Yeah, I've sent you at least two, if not three.
Oh, crap. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we do this?
Hold the line, caller.
We can do this in a non-traditional dum-de-dum way. Why don't we say, let's have a break, chillax, camp coffee, have a touch of the Yokel Bears on the social media. Whilst Yokel Bear is doing his things, you can furiously go through your inbox and pull out those emails I've sent you, and then post Yokel okay. Bear, you read them out before okay. we do Mirror Headlines. Aight? All right.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yokel Bear here calling with the social media roundup for the week. We started the week with the most pointless people's poll we've ever done. We asked the question, would you move in with Hannah? Because obviously Freddie's going to move in there. To say it was a foregone conclusion would be an understatement. 94% of you said, no way am I moving in with Hannah. But 6% said they would. And a big shout out to Dee Dickens, otherwise known as Goddess Diva, who said she would move in with Hannah, but only for, you know, some sexy time. Now, talking of annoying people like Hannah, let's talk about Kate. I was a bit put out this week when she was saying about, oh, you know, having another child would have given her a chance to get it right this time. And I was shouting at the radio, look, just look after your own bloody kids, the ones you've got already. Alex Russell said she's a narcissist and is never going to do anything unless it's for her own benefit. Now, our very own Witherspoon, who's like qualified, says textbook examples of narcissism. Melissa Williams replied to Witherspoon saying, you don't need a fancy Princeton degree to come up with that one. Jacqueline Arnold said, the trouble with Kate is that she's suffering from undiagnosed postnatal disinterest. I really did quite like that tweet post. And I think Yvonne Summers just hit the nail on the head for everyone, which she said, agreed, it seems like Kate is only interested in kids until they're old enough to form their own parents, and then they realise she's a shite mum. Now, before we move on, there is one comment from this particular subject that I did want to read out. It's from Sue Yin Jordan, and it's my don't hold back, say it as you mean it post of the week. Sue Yin said she's the most stupidest, most self-centered, non-self-aware person ever, with hoity-toity brown rice and sandals values. Goodness gracious, when did she train to be a massage therapist, yogi, life coach, vagina steamer? I thought she was doing some kind of business studies. It's all a bit too far-fetched and pretentious. Now let's talk about Trace. Her screaming, Brad, up the stairs was an absolute joy. Now, Helena Bennett, brilliant post this was this week about Tracy, when she said, I was interested in what Tracy said about Roman wanting to improve himself. I think it gives us a strong insight into her own character. For example, how she challenged herself at the role of Grey Gables, or how she doesn't want to repeat the mistakes of past relationships. She's very smart. Now, I absolutely agree with this. Helena, I think you're absolutely on the money here, because listening to this week, I suddenly realised, oh my God, in terms of kind of sheer common sense, I think Trace is the most intelligent person in Ambridge. She's really got it, hasn't she? Mind you, at Dumpty Dum Towers, we are huge Tracy fans. Now, Sandra Jenkinson did said, I have a problem. Having seen Susie on the YouTube channel, and by the way, get along to the YouTube channel, subscribe, please. She says, having seen Susie on the YouTube channel, she doesn't look like Tracy. And I've got to admit, when we met Susie in real life at Dumpty Dum Live, I was a bit kind of like, oh, you don't look like Tracy. But I tell you what, you spend a bit of time, you know, seeing Susie on stage there, you're talking away, you can see flashes of Tracy, and it's just brilliant. Just such good character. Now, we also this week had the naming ceremony, and I saw on the Twitter feed for the Sunday Omnibus, there was a bit of a kind of debate about, you know, naming ceremonies, humanist ones or non-religious ones, better or worse or whatever. And that was quite interesting. But what we talked about this week, now, what would you write on a piece of paper for Xander? Now, I'm just going to say something. My mother phoned me this week. She's been listening to the Archers for years. But she phoned me this week and she said, what's Ian Adam's son's name? I said, it's Xander. She said, Xander? I said, yeah, Xander. She went, like electric Xander. No, mother, it's spelt with a Z. No, it's an X, isn't it? God, I even got that wrong. So what would you write for future Xander? Jerry Rowley said, don't dump any toxic effluent in the am. That could equally be our euphemism of the week, maybe. General advice from Ellen O'Connell, ignore your Aunt Kate's guidance. Oh, God, yeah, she's guide parent, isn't she? A couple of people, including Charles Aptaker, and Karen Cunningham, just basically said, run, Xander, run. And Stephen Bowden said, don't listen to Radio 4 at 7 in the evening or 2 in the afternoon. Janice Betson pointed out as well, said, don't listen to the Archer scriptwriters who deliberately put out an atheist story on Ash Wednesday. Matthew Penny said, claim your Bulgarian passport. That's the point, actually. Would Xander be a joint citizen? Now, Wendy Merrick won this thread when she said, don't take sweets from Freddy and don't ask Johnny why he wears a hat. We also noted on the Facebook this week that this has actually been a really nice week in Ambridge. There's a lot of love going around, a lot of kind of people getting back together, and the whole thing, the conversation with Jazza and Jim and Alistair, and that hug. I can only imagine how awkward it was between Jim and Shula. Now, Sue Popple said, what a refreshing change. Back to some nice episodes. Kate and Jakob were lovely and finally plausible. Jim's story, lovely closure, and great with the Shula hug. Not too much idiot storylines. There was the Kirsty, Philip and Roy thing was lovely. And Lillian and Linda were nicely spiky with Robert nearly growing a pair there. End of the week, I posted saying, I love a good long-running feud, so I'm starting to enjoy the Lillian and Linda conflict. Well, did I get put in my place? Yvonne McKenzie said, absolutely not. It's pointless and it's making me dislike both of them. Jean Bell says, it's sad and unedifying. And most other people agreed that it was just like kind of out of character, not very nice and a bit tedious. Though Linda Curtis did agree with me and said, me, it's brilliant when it all kicks off. But no, I think you're right. Actually, thinking about it, it is kind of really out of character. So that was the week in Ambridge. So there was kind of fights and nice stuff and a lot of love out there. And my mum thinking that the newest addition to Ambridge is an electric Xander. On that note, I'm going to go. So, and the lovely Millabelle will be with you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Mr. Bear. Have you got your email sorted now?
I have. It's from Richard Keeling, who is our keeper of the Dumpty Dates. So Richard is the one who sends us birthday reminders of characters' birthdays, anniversaries, wedding anniversaries, anniversaries of deaths, all things like that. And he said he's a first-time emailer in a row. He said, I am not sure what the etiquette is, but he's giving us the details anyway. Started listening in 2016, which makes him a Lexi. Mm-hmm. The first big storyline I remember is Kirsty losing her baby. I was compelled to write in after the episode when Roy opened up to Kirsty about what I assumed was depression. I thought, this sounds like the start to an interesting storyline that could develop over the next few months and really tackle some hard-hitting topics. Instead, what we got was Kirsty going from not inviting Roy to her wedding to Roy being the best man. Thinking about this could send him into a spiral of depression, so maybe that story isn't a storyline, isn't a loss after all. I just found it very difficult to believe that Kirsty, who had lived with Roy, hadn't thought to invite him to her wedding, and he ended up getting a pity invite rather than a sincere invite. Come on, Kirsty, you're better than this. No offence to Roy, but I hope this is the beginning of a much bigger storyline rather than his mood being fixed by a pity invite. I was surprised that no one suggested his sad mood may have been caused by the pub's name change. Keep up the good work, Richard Keeling. Thank you for all the anniversaries and things that you do, by the way, Richard, on Twitter. You're very conscientious, and it's always interesting because things always happen. It's really hard to guess, I think, because like it, in your own life, you think, you know, I still think of the 90s as being about a fortnight ago. And it's things like that when you suddenly, you know, when he said that he'd been listening since 2016, which is when Lexi arrived. And I thought Lexi was much more recent than that. 2016 seems yonks ago. So it's always sort of a bit of a shocker when you find out how either recent or far away things were.
I like the fact that he's the keeper of the Dumdy dates. It sounds very august. It sounds like there's been a long line of keepers of the Dumdy dates that go back for eons. But actually, it's been about a month.
Yeah. And it sounds like he wears knee breeches and has to
walk
backwards and things like that. Yeah.
Powdered wig.
Maybe he does. We don't know.
Here
maybe he just
the
goes round walking.
Dates.
It's like Black Rod or something.
Yeah.
Keeper of.
I tell you what, just on the whole Black Rod thing.
Mm. You, is that your porn name?
No, it's Brown Rod. Come on. Come on, Lucy.
I wouldn't know.
You've been at the sharp end of my rod before, Freeman. Come on.
I failed. God.
No, but whenever there's a state opening of Parliament, my American friends always ridicule the whole Black Rod thing. You know, it's like, oh, come on, what's all that about? And you have to give them the whole, you know, the whole history lesson, the symbolism that, you know, the monarch cannot go into the House of Commons because it shows that, you know, sovereignty, the power actually truly lies with the people. But it's always state opening of Parliament. I'll always get some American sniggering and saying, "Ah, oh, you Brits, you're hidebound by your ridiculous traditions and your, you know, your knee breeches and your tomfoolery." I just say that because we're in the middle of an American election and things are happening apace. Amy Klobuchar has dropped out today. Mayor Pete has thrown in the towel. It's going to be Biden and Sanders duking it out to be the leader of the free world come November, up against the Orange Man. Anyway, I'm whittering on. I'm going to say no more. Do we have another email, Lucy?
No.
Great. All right, then. Why don't you hit us with some headlines?
Okay. This is from Mama Foof. Tewkesbury mustard balls seek protected status. I don't know who Tewkesbury mustard balls is, but I wish him well. This one was sent by an American listener whose name completely escapes me, and now I can't open it, so I can't even tell you what it was. Rally against apathy draws small crowd. That was from Oklahoma City. And the one that was, I've lost count of the amount of people that sent me this. I loved it. It was from The Independent. Children evacuated from swimming pool after prosthetic leg mistaken for paedophile.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you for those, Luce. Why don't you do Tweets of the Week? Because we've got music. Okay. To end our show. Okay. I want to get to the good bit.
Okay.
Not that the tweets of the week aren't good. Don't take that inference from what I've just said. Because I really enjoy the tweets of the week.
Oh, shut your face, Royfield.
I do.
Okay. I'm trying to do the tweets. Shush now. Shh. Andy D, make the tea. Mm-hmm. Save the life story for Desert Island Discs, Roman. We've got a long morning ahead. Richard listening. I wouldn't really like Shula running her hand over my fatty deposits, thanks all the same. A bit buddish. This is genius. Roman is going to join the village cricket team, and I read about it in Gibbon's Decline of the Roman Empire. Dominic Young. Is he really called Roman? Says Shula, the twin of Kenton. Yes, that is a good point. Dino Goldie. So Yakult is making a fist of it with Kate. But it's never a good sign when a vet asks, where's my watch? That's horrible. And Michelle Laverick.
Is this Tweet of the Week?
Tweet of the Week, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That's the wrong sound effect.
That's the wrong sound.
God damn it. Okay, here we go. All right. Is that Tweet of the Week?
It is.
As you were.
Will Kate be lighting her own brand vagina candles at the naming ceremony?
Oh.
There's a thought to end on.
Well done, you, Freeman. It's been a great show. It's time we need to bring proceedings to an end. It's been a good one this week. I've had caller-inners done their things. We've had lots of non-caller-inners. So if you're a non-caller-inner, why don't you get rid of the non-bit and become one by caller-in next week? Because
and also, I'm going to have to go off and read that Pidgey Whittas book again, the one where the one that's got Alpine Joe in it, and Major Plank and the Zulu Knob Kerry, because he's made me want to read all that again.
Folks, go to dumdydum.com. It's got a shop. It's got our Lucy and a Week in Ambridge on video form, which we take from our YouTube channel. So you can either go on to dumdydum.com to go and view our Lucy there, or you can just go straight to source, so to speak, and just go straight onto the YouTubes and subscribe to our channel, because we need to get up to 1,000. And I'll let you into a little bit of a secret. When we get up to 1,000, it means that we actually get paid by YouTube. It's only going to be about tuppence halfpenny. It's not going to be much, but anything helps. Any little bit helps. So help us to get there by going on to the YouTubes and subscribing to the channel. And don't forget to hit that little bell icon, because then that reminds you that there is a new bit of content on the YouTubes, and invariably be Lucy in front of her fireplace with her penguins behind us, giving us a very visual take on our last week in Ambridge. Patreon.com, you can go there to also help the show. And Patreons, you will be getting some content this week and something extra special from our Lucy and from our Harriet.
No, not this week.
Oh, soon. Ooh. Soon. All right. Ooh, yes. Scratch that. Back up. Boop, 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 boop. Back in the truck up, right? You'll only get Lucy's year in Ambridge exclusively to our Patreons, people that give us $2 per show, which is calculated if you have an English sterling account. Like Patreon does that. So you don't have to worry about it. And it comes out of your bank account once a month and goes into ours and helps us to pay for stuff, microphones, lights, all manner of things which are essential to the production that is Dum-de-dum. So go on to patreon.com, $2 per episode. It's not mandatory that you do it, but Lucy will give you hugs and cuddles the next time she's at the Academic Archers if you out yourself as a Patreon. She'll do that.
I will. I hugged everybody at this willy-nilly.
Even
they couldn't stop me. Even people, I didn't care who they were. I was an
Nilly's
indiscriminate
willy.
Hugger. What?
You hugged
yes.
Nilly's
yes,
willy.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Get in you. You were busy in Reading, weren't you? So that's that. All right. Do you want to read some stuff out? Because I need to start queuing up all these last bits of the show.
Okay, remember to get in contact with us. You can send us a voice message, courtesy of lovely Nicholas, via SpeakPipe on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can call 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message.
You can keep going, I'll tell you what, just whilst you're here, because Nicholas, ever since we started the show, Nicholas has been providing this service for us for free. I'm just going to do this one more time.
Well, hello, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Nicholas Barnes from Vitel here. We're the company that provides, for absolutely no recompense at all, the telephone number you can call in and leave a message on. I just wanted to share with you a new feature we've added. You can now use the same telephone number to record a Dumpty Dum for the beginning of the show. It's clever, it's cool, and all the hip kids are doing it. Simply call 0203 031 3105 and follow the prompts. You'll hear my dulcet tones guiding you through the whole thing. And when it comes to record the Dumpty Dum, you'll hear it in your ear while you're singing, humming, instrumenting, or, well, however you're performing it yourself. It's that easy. Oh, and it can be anonymous too. Nobody has to know it's you. Go on, give it a try. 0203 031 3105.
Oh, there you go. And if you
are ever in need of some telephony services, it's Vitel.com. Go there, tell them that Lucy and Royfield sent you. Thank you very much, please. As you were, Lucy.
Okay. And you can find Yokel Bear at Dumpty Dum, because he's much funnier than us, and he does our social media stuff. Yep. Thank you very much, Royfield. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman, and Royfield can be found.
I'm not outing my Twitter handle anymore because I'm crap on Twitter.
Okay, and Royfield can't be found.
Well, we I can be, but I'm just not.
Missing.
If you haven't listened to the last 318 episodes to know what my Twitter handle is, I ain't going to tell you now. You're not missing out on anything anyway. Facebook, because Lucy's not going to mention Facebook because she doesn't Facebook. So I'll go Facebook. If you want to join us on Facebook, simply type in Facebook into a browser of your choice, log in to that self same platform. Then in the search bar provided on Facebook, type in Dumpty Dum, spelled D-U-M-T-E-E-D-U-M, and that will take you through to a whole page of stuff where Dumpty Dummers talk about the Archers. So you can go do that on Facebook. Lastly, there is the Flick app, and I go big ups to the Flick op posse. Well, Flick op, Flick app posse. God, my teeth and my tongue have had a real argument with each other all the way through this episode. But let me try that again. Big ups to the Flick app posse. That's where I go and like chill out and just like talk to people about stuff. Not always the Archers, mostly. Sometimes it's Dumpty Dum related. And what was very lovely this week on the Flick app was that somebody remarked that Angela Barnes will be too big to be on Dumpty Dum ever again because she's now doing the news quiz. But at least we got her before she got too big. Of which I then told Angela, and Angela got straight back on and says, "Oi, you're not getting rid of me that easily. I will never give up my Dumpty Dum." So that was very lovely of you, Angela. Also, I just need to remind everybody before we go into Alpine Joe loaded some more Nasenfluten, is that we have a date for the next Dumpty Dum Live. If you're in and around Londinium on May the 16th, which is a Saturday, we're going to be at King's Place, which is at King's Cross, at 4:30. And Emerald, who plays Emma Grundy, will be joining us on stage. And there'll be Angela Barnes, there'll be Lucy, and there could be other people as well besides. It's going to be a proper giggle. You've got no excuses if you're in and around London, and who isn't, basically. You can get yourself down there. Tickets will go on sale soon. Put that date in your diary now. Is there anything which you'd like to say in closing before Alpine Joe and our Iris round off the show?
To say thank you so much to Dr. Nicola Headlam and Dr. Cara Courage for having me at the Academic Archers, because I had a really lovely time and they're splendiferous people, everybody there. It was great.
I got a lovely WhatsApp from Mia from Newcastle with a lovely picture of you together. She says, "Oh, I've just fan-killed Lucy. She's so wonderful." Whatever. And Claire Asprey was like, "Oh my God, Lucy was so good." Whatever. So I felt I was almost there. You know, all the WhatsApps that were flying into my phone on Saturday. So well done, Freeman. Extremely proud of you. Thank you for representing.
No, it was lovely to be there.
All of us Dumpty Dummers at the Academic Archers. Now, here is a little touch of Alpine Joe.
Achtung! Alpine Joe here.
I was in a Nasenfluten. Although it was filled with some really complimentary, I think he's a bit mean asking her to do Primal Screams Loaded, because this is what it is.
Yes, that's what you want to do.
We want to get loaded, and we want to have a good time.
Thank you.
Now, without further ado, Ryfield, here's to you.
Boom.
Can I just say it again? I think I'm in love with Iris from Germany. No, it wasn't Primal Screams Loaded, but it was St. Etienne's Only Love Can Break My Heart, which is in my top 10 all-time favourite songs of all time. So that, seriously, I was totally floored. Thank you, Iris, and for playing your Nasenfluten on my podcast. And in your honour, because I did kind of Google stalk you, and I see that you are part of the band Iris, I thought we'd end this week's Dumdy Dum with one of your monster hits that you and your folk rock pop band have actually done over there in Deutschland. So this track is entitled Munster's Secret something or another. Anyway, it's good, it's hip, it's groovy. Get on your dancing shoes, have a bit of this. Auch ganz prima ein.
muss dafür noch nicht mal weit laufen. Nur etwas Vorsicht auf dem Körnemarkt ist so ab 18 Uhr schon angesagt. Dann kommen muskelschwere Schränke.
Wir brauchen
jetzt die Bänke. Die grünen Hügel deiner Mülldeponie will ich hier weg. Das heißt natürlich jetzt Recyclinghof. Ich liebe diesen Fleck. Du klingst wie Magdeburger Börde. Börde, Börde, Börde. Man denkt auch gleich an Kielerförde. Wow, wow, Körde. Die grünen Hügel deiner Mülldeponie will ich hier weg. Das heißt natürlich jetzt Recyclinghof. Ich liebe diesen Fleck. Du klingst wie Magdeburger Börde. Börde, Börde, Börde. Man denkt auch gleich an Kielerförde. Wow, wow, Körde.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.